Welcome to the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast. This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions.
And Nathan with Legendary Productions.
And we are joined today by host Alfonso Garcia.
How's it going, everybody?
What's up?
Hey, so how's it going, guys?
Good. Great day. Beautiful day today.
Really beautiful day. Unseasonably cold.
And I was just noticing, Nathan, what a devastatingly gorgeous man you are.
You know, I was just thinking the same thing about you.
Maybe we should end the podcast here. I think Nathan.
All right, guys, for the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast.
And that's a wrap.
No, that would be a shame if we ended early, because we have a really juicy topic today. I think this is a good
one. Well, you said juicy. As I scanned from juicy. Mike and went to you, I was like, Alfonso's handsome, too.
That's a great word to describe me, isn't it?
Mike, you didn't agree, or what? You kind of got quiet. Were you blushing?
Oh, I was surveying the situation here.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I only see this for this profile. You know, you've got the full head-on
view. That's true. A straight shot. Anyways, what's the juicy topic today?
The juicy topic today. So this one we got from a listener, and if you have any questions, please reach out to us on Buzzsprout. Click on that fan mail button. That's where we're getting all these great questions from. But this is a really interesting one. Do you ever walk into a room and you just don't sound like you do in your room? Why do I sound so terrible in the audition room, yet I sound so good in my room? Am I over-preparing? Let's start with you on that, Michael.
I don't think I've ever been asked that before. I don't know if I've ever thought about that before. Why you sound so good and then you get up there? I don't know. Could it be a case of nerves? I mean, if you're sounding really, really good one location and then you get up on stage and all of a sudden it's not going quite as well. I don't know. Maybe. What do you think? Nerves?
I think it would be nerves, but then you're not being judged in your bedroom or in your hallway or your studio, wherever you're recording. No one's judging you. You're judging yourself. And with self-tapes, you get to do 500 of them and pick the best out of 500. At an in-person audition, it's one and done, and that's what you got. So I think it's nerves. I think it's the fear. Sometimes I do think you could over-prepare where you practice it to death and it starts losing its flavor. I think that could be part of it. I also think you could over-prepare as far as once you've been cast. I think you could maybe over-prepare too much where you're locked into a certain role, so there's no room for growth or direction. But even at auditions, when there's a callback, and if you've prepared so much in that character and that's all you have, when the director or directors or production team say, try this, then you start to flounder like, you know, freaking out because you're like, wait, that's not what I know. So I think sometimes just being prepared as well, knowing that things may, if I say, try, we'll just go with an accent, try the British. Wait, no, it's not British. That's not what I prepared for. Well, as a director, you're kind of like, well, I would like to have some options to have, you know, play around a little bit, have some fun, because I want to know where you're going to take the direction that I give. Are you going to be able to take and receive that? You know, are you going to be able to process that? Or is it like, no, this is what I think and feel the character is? Well, cool, but it's not technically your show, so where's that balance?
It's an interesting discussion to have, because just on our previous episode, we were talking about, you know, how much directors appreciate the actors coming in so very prepared, and now we're talking about, you know, the pendulum swung. We're talking about being over-prepared to the part where it starts to become a bit detrimental to you in the cast, and you know, you see that time to time where somebody is taking it so seriously, which is awesome, but they take it so seriously that they can no longer see any version of that character or that play rather than the one that they have prepared for. So it's like they walk into it knowing exactly that vision that they have, but then you know, boom, they bump into the director's vision for that play. And you know what, actually, coming to think of it, I've been in that experience a few times. Been in that experience a few times where I am preparing and I'm finding all the jokes and pulling out this, pulling out that, like, oh, this is great. And I go in there and the director's like, hey, don't play up that line so much. I'm like, don't play up that line so much? That's one of the best lines. It's so funny. Yeah, but we don't want to do the comedy right there. I don't want that delivered as a comedic line. But it's funny. It's a comedic line. So, you know, you you will get into it with you know, directors if you do that. Still, I think I would rather have that type of.
Well, that was just Nathan adjusting his chair. Sorry for the interruption there, Michael. You can continue now.
Boy, those just listening, they're not going to get to see that wonderful thing that just happened. Hopefully, we will be able to put the video on that one. Nathan sink down into the chair. I think I would rather have that almost where you have a disagreement, but it's because you overprepared rather than somebody who has brought in nothing at all, has not been able to prepare anything, doesn't have a, I don't know. I think I might rather have the overprepared so long as they are willing to flex.
Well, so if you're over-preparing, that's obviously a bad thing. We know what under-preparing looks like. You're not going to... So what does healthy preparation look like?
I think trying to stay as much on the same page as the director. You know, finding out exactly, okay, what do you want from me? Let me know, and you will have that. I will... Killing time while Nathan gets ready. It's like jumping.
Just having some slight technical difficulties. We're doing just fine, though.
Sorry, you got a tinder. I do think that I agree with Mike on that. I do think there is a point where you want them to be very prepared, but the truth is, I do think there's got to be room for growth or change. That has to happen, because again, we've talked about this many times. You got the role a couple months ago when auditions were announced. This has been a part of the season or the production team's vision in mind for a long time. So I think there's got to be a little bit of room to go, what do they want to see for this show? I think that's part of it.
I got an interesting question here. Maybe if you can understand what I'm asking here, can that preparation become a bit of a security blanket in that you put that preparation in, but when it kind of comes time to put the work in, you don't put that work in? Do you understand what I'm saying? Sometimes people prepare so much that it's like they're sitting on it and I can turn it on, and they kind of take that for granted. Is that something that you see?
Nathan?
Yeah, I think it is, because of the rehearsal process. You go in there, it's a safety blanket because that's what you know. You go in there, it's almost reciting a poem from memory. You just go, Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow. You know, that's it. You're done. And that's a safety net. But if I go, hey, say it a little slower or bring in a little bit of, like, sadness into that, and you're like, well, it's not sad. Exactly. Show me sadness. And then you see sometimes the deer in headlights, the actor or actress goes, ah! They don't say that, but you see it. And then they go... And that's why I always try to be kind and go, hey, I'll give you a few moments to process that. And even in that short time, I know it's a lot because we're going to have a rehearsal process to go together. But I think that's why I think over-preparation is not necessary. Just know that, just be flexible. Just go for it. And I don't think, and I'm going to speak for myself, Mike, you may disagree, but at an audition, I really don't want to say there's a wrong option. If I say do it sad, go for it. Show me your choice. It's not always about right or wrong. It's about the willingness to try to convey what the director's asking for, the production team's asking for. Go for it. Because the directing, knowing that you took my direction, is the important part, because then we could work on how to get there. But showing that you're willing to take the direction, for me, I think is the most important part. Mike?
I got no disagreement with that. I don't know. Somebody coming in over prepared. That just, in a sense, I don't know. It's like, does that happen? Doesn't happen to me. I'm sure it happens to you.
But you got to tie into there. You got
any? Well, I'm glad that you're going more into the direction of like what the director, what the actors are actually doing, right? Because they're the preparation they're putting in when they're rehearsing. This might veer off a little bit. This is just, I'm more curious. Do you feel that those actors are rehearsing emotions rather than intentions? And how does that affect what they actually produce? I'll start with you on that one, Mike.
Well, I love to get to the point where the emotion can come out. And I probably at the start, I would say it's intentions, with the understanding that it's going to build to emotion. But it's you know, kind of hard to reach that emotional peak in those first episodes, you know, first rehearsals, when you know you got a script in your hand and you're still reaching for the lines and you can't you know, make 100% eye contact with the person, and what, you know, when you're still relying on the script.
Do you want emotion or attention? What do you want? What do you want from that actor? Typically, what do you feel is more effective?
Did you say emotion or attention?
Or intention?
Intention.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's what I want, and there's, you know, what we can get in the early rehearsals. I mean, like I said, so we're going to build up to whatever that emotion is going to be in the scene. I don't expect it right away, but I want to be able to see the glimpses of it. Like, I want to at least know that, like, hey, we understand where we're heading. I don't know if it's a big argument, all-out fight, if it's going to be a tearjerker scene. And those are hard, too, because there has to be this, you know, I mean, for me, I need to feel it as well. I need to be able to feel that. And there needs to be a certain energy that is created about there. And that's not going to happen until everybody understands. So I would say, like, you know, when you're rehearsing the intentions of it all, you're rehearsing, you're knowing that is going to come about, the emotion, but we may not get there tonight or tomorrow night, but, you know, the goal is, let's rehearse it. Let's go through all the blocking and the robotic stuff so that then, okay, we know what everybody's doing. We're going to rehearse it again. And then when we can finally drop the script and go through it, then it can start to get real.
Nathan, same question on that. Do you feel that actors rehearse emotions instead of attentions? What's your preference?
Well, I'm going to start with a short little story. I remember when I was, I don't know, somewhere in my teens, I found out the directors have always said, since we were little, we've heard, go somewhere with your character. If you're angry, you're the villain, start somewhere so you can go somewhere. But I don't remember the age exactly, but somewhere in my teens, I was in a role, and I remember I played this villain, and I was playing, everything I did was very much quiet. Like, I didn't yell, nothing was loud, and most people think villains are like, ah, like rage quit. I played everything so quiet and very calculated. And I was so proud of myself. My intention was to be a villain. And I remember the director saying, like, where's your level? Like, you're coming across creepy and mad, but, like, where is, like, what are you trying to convince? Like, I'm the villain. And fast forward to a couple weeks, days into the rehearsal process, I remember sitting there thinking, what is the audience receiving from me? Like, what emotion are they taking from that? And the truth is, my intentions were that, but the emotions I was conveying weren't authentic. They weren't real. And that's weird, because I was in my teens, and I remember thinking that. I actually remember I was laying on my bed going over my lines, laying on the opposite side of my bed, and I was just, all of a sudden, like, this light went on. I'm like, what emotion am I trying to make the audience feel? Intentions sometimes come across, I think, robotic. They don't come across as authentic. And I think emotions, I feel audiences can relate to emotions. We've all been upset. We've all been sad. We've been mad, happy, joyous. So if we're trying to convey, I'm not saying this is always the case, but I would say if we're trying to convey an emotion, I think that's more relatable than intentions. Intentions sometimes, I think, can be blurry. You're like, well, it wasn't my intention to hurt your feelings. It wasn't my intentions. We hear that all the time. It wasn't my intention to be rude to you. Well, you still were. The emotions conveyed were that, you know? But I do agree with Mike that's at the skeleton. When I block shows, I call it skeleton blocking. I think that's the foundation you start with, is the skeleton blocking or the intentions. But then you quickly leave that. As soon as you're memorizing, you have the information, it turns into the emotional journey and what you're trying to convey. So I think the final product would definitely be emotions, because I feel like that's more authentic.
Okay. So. Yeah, that just me as an actor. That was a question I had, because seemed like a good way to shoehorn that one in. So good, good.
Nice.
So okay, just kind of getting back to the preparation aspect of it, though. And Nathan, I know your answer because we've talked about this, so I'm going to ask you first because I want you to tell. Can you tell immediately when someone has rehearsed one version of a character or a song?
Yeah, instantly. Especially when in the rehearsal process. And or they feel like their motivations, and I'm not saying that that's not a real question, like, what's my motivation for this? But I feel like sometimes that's a cop-out. Like, well, why am I doing that? Well, why, you tell me why your character would do that. Like, you tell me why. Like, give me that answer. That's good. That's a good homework for you. But you could tell when people are locked in or they think that they should play a role a certain way. And like I said, when I was younger, I had the same issue. I was like, this is what I'm doing. This is so good. And it was dark. And I remember some of the cast went, Nathan, you're creepy. It's so good. The director's like, it became boring and there's no levels. And so, yeah, you could definitely tell. And I feel like sometimes as performers, we miss out on the opportunity to experience true growth. And I don't mean just, oh, I got more experience, or I slayed that song or that scene. But the true growth, to take a character and switch it from what you feel is the best choice and to swap it up and change it greatly and to make it be what the director sees. And even just to make that kind of like a homework project, be like, you know, I did this scene, you know, we'll just say quiet when I was angry. It was very focused anger. And then to switch it up, show me crazy angry, and then find the middle ground there. Play with that. That's an opportunity I think you get to have as a performer to really get to do what we love, to create and to make something special for you as a performer in that moment. Because if I did a role, Alfonso, and then you went in there and then Mike did it, it's going to be completely different the way we play that. But after watching you two perform, there's something I may watch and go, dude, I want to try that. And why not take that and use that to grow my character even better? Right. Or go, oh God, I'm not doing it that way. Like, use what you can and throw away what you don't want.
It makes me think of when, you know, I mentioned last episode how introverted I was, mm-hmm. and, you know, walking into a college theater and seeing, like, you know, all these fantastic actors, and I'm just the quiet one. And we were doing this night of, like, little short scenes from monologues, dialogues, stuff like that, just like an actor's showcase. And I got assigned the Romeo monologue from the balcony scene. Mm-hmm. And but soft would lie through yonder window breaks. And I was so nervous about this monologue because I was started thinking, like, this is like the famous monologue. Everybody knows this monologue. Look at all the actors who have done this monologue in film. And it was like, I'm just so nervous. Like, I'm going to go up there and blow this. Everybody has seen this monologue done, and they've seen it done better than this quiet little introvert. And I remember this kind of, you know, veteran person that was hanging around the theater, and they're just like, you know, I had mentioned I was nervous. They're like, dude, just come on. Go out there, make it your own, and do it differently than anybody else has ever done it. Just go out there and make it your own. And it wasn't a scene where it was being directed. It was like just a showcase. Like, everybody, right, put your go monologues your together own. And yeah, put together yourself. And you know, we may have gotten a couple comments from the director as we were doing it, but not like it was being full on directed. Just when we started putting it together for the dress rehearsal, just like, hey, try this or slow down there. Okay, move on. But nothing that was spent a lot of time on. And I just remember that, and I still remember that to this day on those scenes where, you know, other people have done them, and, you know, some of those characters that they're like a dream to play, and lots of really great actors have played those characters, and you start to think, man, how can I measure up? The temptation might be to copy those characters. Mm-hmm. But then you miss what that guy told me to go out there and do. Go out and put your own spin on it. Make it your own. This is your time. You get to play this part now. It's not, they're not asking for this person's version of the character. They're asking for your version of the character.
And people think sometimes, and I've heard this, I think I'm a lazy block or lazy direct, but I very much so give the actors and actresses a lot of room to make the role their own, because I feel like the audience will accept that more as real. So there's a lot of times where I'll step back and let them have their moment, and then And then I obviously navigate and say, hey, let's try this, if it's not necessarily coming across to fit the overall picture. But I give a lot of freedom so the actor gets to do what they love to do, act and create. I don't want them to be mimics. I don't want them to do exactly. Maybe certain moments I may say, hey, lift your arm here, or turn your back at this moment, or look over your shoulder here, or drop your head, or whatever. But I give a lot of freedom to do exactly that, where I go, make it your own. And then we'll dial in kind of the theme or the through theme where everyone kind of meets in the middle there and creates that together. But
when you give them that freedom, do you find that too many acting choices hurt the performance, though? And that's where you have to reel it in? Or there can really never be too many choices?
I think I don't think there's too many. I think it's what, when I put on my audience member's hat as the director, that's our job. It's more about what am I receiving from you as the performer. I don't think there's too many. Now, I don't think every word you say should have a hand movement. I don't think you need to lift your head on every sentence or anything like
point
that.
Point east on east?
Yeah.
Because the audience doesn't know where east is.
No, you don't need to point east on east or none of that stuff. I think being real, that's my job to watch. If you're making choices, go for it. And then as an audience member, I look and go, you know, it's a little muddy or it's distracting. You're not playing second fiddle. It's not your time to focus on you. I'm looking at someone else right now. I think that's when it becomes a little distracting or too much.
You know what is would be a kind of an interesting discussion, because Alfonso was mentioning you got the newcomers into the theater versus a veteran actor who's been there, has ownership. Mm-hmm. Now, what about when those people are in a scene together and you've got the veteran actor versus the new person who's never done it? Now, you don't like to necessarily, and I don't either, give out too much direction, and that veteran actor probably doesn't need it, but the newcomer does. And yet you've got them both in there. How do you tackle that one?
I give them the same amount of freedom. And then after, I give them time to process the scene. And a lot of times, if you're in a scene with someone that has a little more experience, I don't want to say you go along for the ride, but you get to work off of them. And then if you're really willing to learn and do better, then take what you can from them and use them as that stepping stone, that safety net. And then as the director, what I do is, a little later when the scene work's happening, I'll be like, hey, I saw you were trying this. Let's try this. You know, what do you think about that? Make it become their own. So then, as Alfonso has mentioned in the past, then they go, wow, I really came up with that. Then there's a sense of ownership that they take with that, and then they lock that in. That becomes theirs that they use later in other shows that they don't even realize that, wow, I learned that in that process.
Tip for a new actor that made me think of through that discussion. If you are a new actor, you're in that situation. Sometimes it's the new actors that don't really know how much freedom they have. Like they don't want to overstep their bounds, and so they just don't do anything. Like they might stand there, their feet may never move unless you tell them to. Their hands may be like right at their side. They may not be doing any type of expression or trying anything with their voice because they're not sure if they can yet. They haven't. Like maybe they're waiting for the director to tell them. So tip for a new actor, you may just want to have like the initial discussion with the director, like, hey, what would you like me to do? Do you want me to stand still until you tell me to move? Do you want me to try some stuff on my own? What would you like to see? Because every actor is different. You know, you'll see one new actor and they'll be like with the director may say, oh, just feel free to try it. That same actor will then go do their second show with the director like, what the heck? I didn't tell you to do that. Did I tell you to move?
Yeah.
Get back there. You know, it's like, so you may just want to see like, okay, what are you working with right off the bat?
I think tying into that, I think also the fun part is we talked about this in the past. Some of the most experienced people on stage, you're talking about experience versus not as much. Well, they're dialing it in. They're not really showing the effort being put in. So then the new actor or actress goes, well, they're not really trying, but really they quote unquote are, but they get complacent sometimes because they're established, you know, they're theater royalty. Well, that's not the best advice either. As a new person, come in there and outshine them, put more work in, show them that you're equally as talented. Go for it.
The first ever stage direction I got was like my freshman year. I was doing a production of Big River, Tales of Huck Finn, and I joined like a couple weeks into it. and I didn't know what to do. That the rehearsal had begun, and it was the opening number, and the ensemble's just running around. And I'm just, I just went to the corner and went, and I was just like overwhelmed. And then I went to the director and I said, I don't know what to do. And he just like gives me a big smile, puts his hand on my shoulder, and he points over to like one of the seniors. He's like, you see him right there? Just go do what he does. I was like, all right. So like I just went out there like these big parachute and then like these big parachute pants, and I just run out there, and everything that he's doing, I'm just doing it. What I didn't realize is that I was like his son, and I'm this younger version of him, so I'm like this awkwardly trying to figure out what he's doing, played into the scene, and the director is just like, it's like kind of what you said, just trust me. Yeah. But he looked at me and was just, go do what he does. I understood that, and it was like, all right, cool. Like, and he wasn't overthinking it, it was just being and doing, and it was like funny. Yeah. So yeah, sometimes it's just you fall into it that way.
Show us what he was doing again.
I was just a lot of flailing of the arms, but this is an audio show, Michael, so I don't know that they can
really
see that.
Well, no, we are getting video today.
Yeah, hello, video, yes. Now we can see all the arms going on here, but yeah, so for me, it's just, I just walked into it, trusted it, and there it was, magic happened. But do you think that, like, some people do, like, over-prepare and they jump in, like, they bury themselves in it because of they're so afraid? Is that rooted in fear more than anything? And they lock in because they don't trust themselves?
I think that's like a psychological, like a Freud on a couch kind of thing. Because I think people pull from all kinds of places. And I think certain shows, it just depends what they're going through in their life. Whether maybe they're going through some family trauma or drama. So then what they're reflecting maybe during that show and that process is way different than what they've ever shown before. And then the next time they may be on cloud nine, promotion, got a raise, just bought a new house or moved into a condo, and they come in with a whole different vibe or energy. So I think it's very circumstantial. As far as preparedness, is that the word? I don't know.
Whatever. It is now.
It is. But as far as being prepared, I think Mike said it earlier, I'd rather you be over-prepared and be willing to change and be able to flex than not. So I don't know if you could over-prepare. But I definitely think as performers or actors, and I'll speak for myself, it's very vulnerable to put yourself out there with the opportunity that you may, or you may feel like you come up short or not quite as good. So I think there's a lot of vulnerability in performing, whether it be singing or acting. So I think sometimes people overprepare because they're afraid of looking like a fool, or they overprepare because that's their personality and they're very OCD and that's just how they function. But I think the two things are trust the process and go through it and see what's up. Like, I think that's mainly the...
I will tell you where, like, being overprepared came to bite me one time. Because I think I was in high school, and I was in this... it was a choir. It was a choral concert. And I had been given some music and told to learn a specific part, like, hey, you're going to do this harmony. And so came in, you know, learned it, worked very hard, because in those times, early on especially, harmony was not easy for me, learning how to do that. And, I've gotten much better at it through the years.
Well, that's a skill you definitely possess now.
Had lots of training, but, you know, back then I didn't have it. So put all this work, because that was, you know, the part I was told you're going to do this. And then we get in there and the director is like, hey, I had a change. You're going to do this part now. And I'm just like, well, what? And, I think that my initial panic came off as being disrespectful to him, like I was unwilling. And, you know, he pulled me aside. He's like, hey, you know, frankly, I'm the director and you're going to do what I say. And I'm like, I would get a put. But really, I was just panicked because I put all this work into it. And it wasn't, he wasn't switching me to the melody. He was switching me to a second harmony. So it was forget the first harmony you learn the second one. And now I'm worried, what if I can't get this out of my head? What if I can't? I don't know. I'm already not good at this. And so, I want to say, like, it was not me refusing to do it, but it was me being very afraid that I was not going to be able to. But they read that wrong, and it did cause a bit of a riff between, me and the director at that point.
Well, I would freak out too. You're switching harmonies on me. I'd be like, what, bro? Like, huh? I mean, that's valid. I think that's a valid argument, honestly. Like, come
good,
on, man.
Good stuff, guys. We're getting the wrap-up signal, but I would just wrap it up by saying, I mean, obviously, we have to prepare. That's something that we have to do, but the audience isn't going to connect to precision. It's going to be the presence that they connect to. I think we can agree on that.
Well, and a closing thought, over-prepare all you want to, but remember that it may have to change.
There you go. Be flexible.
Be flexible.
Well, very well said. Well, for the Upstaging Gentlemen podcast, this is Alfonso.
This is Michael with Play With Your Food Productions. And remember to hit us up on our Facebook, Buzzsprout, or Instagram. We'd love to hear from you.
And Nathan, rock out.
See you guys next time.
Later.